Welcome everyone to this week's episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm coming from you live from Oslo, Norway. So special episode of the Electric Podcast. But as usual, I'm here with my co-host, Seth Winchell, coming live from New York. How are you, Seth? Seth, can you hear me?
Yes. How are you doing?
Oh, sorry.
There's a delay.
Yeah, it might be a delay. I'm on the Wi-Fi here in the hotel room, so it's not the best situation, and also holding my mic. Hopefully you can hear me well, but we have plenty of articles to go through this week and try to break down for you. Maybe just a quick note on why I'm in Norway right now that might be useful for those who are wondering. I'm here for a quick test drive of the Mercedes-Benz EQC, their new electric SUV. Unfortunately, I'm under embargo for any type of driving impressions until next week, I think the 15th. So you're going to be on the lookout for an article on the electric on that. And we're going to talk about it on next week's episode of the Electric Podcast. But I'm here because they have a bunch of production version of the EQC. They just started production, and that's something that we can talk about. It's something that we reported earlier this week. They started production of the electric EQC, which they produce in Bremen and in Germany and in Beijing, in China. In China is for the Chinese market, and Germany is for the global market. First deliveries are starting next month. They have a special edition 1886. We reported on that a few weeks ago. We talked to you guys about that. Basically the same vehicle, but with a few design accents that are different. And that's getting to reservation holders first, starting next month, and they plan to ramp up production throughout the end of the year. Probably closer to the end of the year, they're going to start delivering the standard version and get cars to dealerships and ramp up deliveries. The U.S. market should expect to get the car around that time, and not any time closer than that. I kind of want to give my impression of the cars, but I can't. So it's like a weird situation.
I think you said a little bit, before you even drove this is kind of a Mercedes EV for Mercedes owners, kind of like the Audi is for.
Without going into the driving itself, I think I can say that, like the Audi e-tron is to Audi vehicles, Mercedes EQC is going to be very familiar to Mercedes owners. So if you're a Mercedes owner, you're looking to change your car, and you're constantly going electric, then it's going to be a much easier transition for you than going with any other car, I think. It's really built around the Mercedes-Benz experience, so luxury interior. But I keep going back to wanting to talk about the driving and everything, but
save it for the article.
Yeah, that's going to be for next week. But be on the lookout for that, because they did introduce a few things that are completely novel to electric vehicle experience. So that's going to be interesting on that front. I was surprised by a few things, but then they also made a few of the same mistakes that I think legacy automakers do with electric vehicles. There's a lot to talk about on that front, so we'll get into that. But let's get into the Tesla news this week. What was in the Tesla world?
You're in Europe, and European Tesla owners got two nice gifts that we don't get in the U.S. One is the Model 3 tow hitch, and the other is the CCS combo adapter. I think there's a reason for both of those, but and maybe we should go into that a little bit.
Yeah, well, the CCS adapter, they launched it this week, but it's apparently won't be available until next month, until the 1st of June. But what happened when we say they launched it is, as apparently Model S and X need a different hardware to work with the CCS adapter. So it's not just like the CHAdeMO where you just buy the adapter and then it works with your car. This CCS, the new CCS adapter, only works with cars produced with Model S and X. Model 3, of course, doesn't need an adapter now. It, in Europe, it has the connector as standard, the charge port, CCS charge port. Model S and X still has the same Type 2 style connector, but they have a new hardware that works with a CCS adapter, which is weird because now they clearly changed something in the production, and instead of going CCS, they kept the Type 2, but they changed the hardware to support an adapter.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. You would think that they would just put a CCS adapter, like maybe like they did in China with that extra thing or something, but they still have the typical Tesla port and then a CCS combo adapter.
Mm-hmm.
For those of us in the US and Canada and elsewhere around the world, one wonders that if Tesla will be providing a CCS combo adapter for us at some point in the future.
Yeah, when I did report on the launch, I did ask that to Tesla because the only information came from Tesla's support page for the charging and the information about the CCS adapter, which was very basic. The information is basically, like we said, now compatible with all cars from the 1st of May. Older cars can get a retrofit upgrade to it, but it costs $500. And for those cars that already have it, like for new cars coming out the line, they still have to buy the CCS adapter, which is €170, so around $190. That's the equivalent in the US, but it's not available in the US, like Seth just said. So when that came out, I asked Tesla, will it ever be available in the US? And or even is it, since they changed the production already, would it be compatible? Would the new cars in the US be compatible with the adapter? And Tesla's response that they plan to, because you know, some context to make the answers make sense. Why would someone want that in the US and Canada? Because Tesla superchargers haven't changed to CCS like they did in Europe. The answer would be like to have access to non-Tesla charging network like the Electrify America, like other CCS networks coming up. So Tesla's answer is what they will make sure that Tesla owners in North America will get access to all, and here's the important word, compelling networks.
That's interesting because there's already a CHAdeMO adapter out there.
And there's no compelling CHAdeMO networks.
I guess. That's interesting because maybe, you know, compelling could be a...
can be like a way to cheat the system and say there's no other compelling network, so we're not going to offer it.
Right.
But, and to a certain point, they're right, but it's coming, like it's growing and everything. So I think at some point it would be useful for some Tesla owners to have it. But at the same time, as I say that, and like right now, there's just no way that I would pay $500 or $190, whichever it is, depending on your cars or if you need the retrofit, on the CCS adapter.
Yeah, and it sounds like if you bought your car before, you know, pretty recently, you're going to need a retrofit on the car as well. Mm-hmm. Which doesn't sound trivial. It sounds like, you know,
$500.
Yeah, you got to take your car apart. It's not like something you can just do at home.
Would you do it? Is there enough right now CCS charging station that you could use that you'd feel like you'd get the upgrade?
So two things with that. One, I already have a CHAdeMO adapter, which I got because I had referral credit. But it actually comes in handy in Vermont, or did before we got our charger at the condo there. So I have that. So most people don't have that, and I haven't used it in a while. I'm almost thinking about going to a CHAdeMO adapter and just putting it on a chain and leaving it there for Tesla owners to use, because I feel like I'm not getting any value out of it.
That thing's worth like $500.
I know it's $450, but maybe we'll do a giveaway or something. Anyway, you know, like I don't really need I don't need any kind of adapter. I feel like the Tesla network is everything I need currently. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you go to if these things were faster, for instance, or more plentiful, maybe it would make sense to get an adapter. But I feel like they're slower, they're almost nowhere, and they cost money. Like, it's really not a lot of incentive.
Yeah, you're one of the Tesla owners that are still on the free supercharger program. So the difference between free and even though like gas is of course the most expensive of all three options, between free and between using something like the EVgo network, it's the cost is significant.
Yeah, and it's kind of a pain. Sometimes you have to call them up because the thing's not working or whatever. It's like the times that we've had to use the not Tesla charging networks have always been a little bit stressful and like, is this going to work? And they've always charged slower than advertised. So, you know, you don't get 120 kilowatts full Tesla charge, but you get over 100 for most of it until you hit like 50% at least. Whereas you go to a 50 kilowatt CHAdeMO adapter and you'll get like 20 to 30 depending on a lot of things, but it's a big difference.
Yeah, for sure. And that's about it for the CCS adapter, I suppose. Coming in next month, you should be able to you can order it, I think, already from the service centers. It's not on teslashop.com, but if you're in Europe, you should be able to go to the service center and order it. And as for the retrofit, again, that's in June. That starts in June.
And then we got the tow hitch for the model.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's also only in Europe, like you started with. So that's kind of a bummer if you wanted that in the U.S. Though in the U.S., there's still some third parties that's going to install you an hitch on the Model 3, but that's at your own risk.
Yeah, I think most people want them for like bike racks and I guess ski, snowboard things, but
Tesla did announce a rated towing capacity of 2,000 pounds,
which isn't a lot.
It's not a lot, but you can do more than just bikes. Like you can do some small trailers.
You can do boats, like rowboats and motorboats.
Yeah, some small boats,
kayaks
for sure. But yeah, you're right though. It's more for bikes and for skis. Though Tesla already launched a roof rack.
Yep.
The Model 3 earlier this year, last year, maybe a few months back, and made that, because I hear a lot of complaints about people like doing that. Like, well, for the bikes, I suppose not that bad because it's not in the winter, but like for skis, putting your skis in the just behind your car where there's a lot of dirt and snow and slush that just gets all mixed up together might not be ideal. But in the summer for carrying your bikes around, that's I think the best solution. I think it's more aerodynamic than put it on your roof rack, right?
And Cedric and Davion 89 are saying in the comments that people in Europe use trailers like Americans use pickups, which I hadn't thought of before. Mm-hmm. But you know, we have a very big pickup culture here in the U.S.
Yeah.
I think that's why. Because they don't have that in Europe. I think that's why trailer hitches are so, so important there.
Mm-hmm.
Which I hadn't thought of before, but now that I think about it, you know, if you want to move something and you got a trailer and everybody's got a trailer, it's not really a bad way to do it.
Yeah. You can rent those U-Hauls pretty easy.
I guess too. If gas wasn't almost free like it is here, that would be a bigger thing probably.
Yeah. There's also those kind of cargo hitch where you have a cargo space that attached to the hitch. You cannot put that much weight in that because, the weight is not balanced very well. But if you have something that's like bigger than wouldn't fit on your trunk, and the Model S trunk is not that big. Those things I've seen some of those things here in Norway. Like I've been driving all day now. Yeah, if I sound tired, guy, I apologize, but I'm still it's past 10 o'clock here, 10 p.m., and I've been driving around all day, so and then on not much sleep on my way back. I don't think that's a driving impression of the EQC. I can say that on my way back from the trip today, It's been raining all day here, and the wipers was just putting me to sleep. I was like following the wipers and falling asleep. I had to slap myself in the face a few times just to awake and make sure I don't crash that $80,000 car or something. But yeah.
All right. So back to Tesla. We're going to talk about their software lead and in particular, Lex Fridman's conversation with Joe Rogan, which you and I are both big Joe Rogan fans.
And Lex Fridman fan, I was saying.
And Lex Fridman as well.
Now, I've heard that guy talk a few times now. It was the second time on his podcast. I think the first time he was like crazy nervous. And now he's like, it was more relaxed, more into it. And I really like him. Like, he's very personable. It's really very interesting point of view.
I had to fast forward through the beginning of the Godfather
and Jiu-Jitsu.
Kind of a woman talk, right?
Yeah, you're not that big of an MMA fan. No, that's probably like I like him too a little bit because I'm a big MMA fan too.
So anyway, he got to talking about AI, and it was quite interesting.
Yeah, if you don't know, Lex Fridman is some sort of AI expert. He's a machine learning expert who focuses on interaction between automation system and human. So human-centered automation system. He's based at the MIT, and he's done a bunch of research regarding the Tesla Autopilot itself. We reported on it back in 2016, where before the Model 3 came out, Model 3 has a camera that's driver-facing, but it's not on right now. But even before that, he put some cameras inside the Model S and X with the Autopilot to just look at the human's interaction with the technology inside the car when they are on Autopilot. So not just the technology of the Autopilot itself, but also like the screens. So how many times they will look at the screens, they're looking at the road, their phone, whatever, just to see if people would become more complacent with the system or if they are... if they instead use the energy that they save from the task of that is replaced by Autopilot to instead pay more attention to the road and be more alert and be safer. So that was a very interesting study. And he's done a bunch of similar stuff with Autopilot since and some other system like the Super Cruise from GM and the similar driver assist system. He went on the Joe Rogan podcast to talk a little bit about that. Of course, he ended up talking a lot about Tesla because his work has a lot to do with Tesla. And now Joe Rogan is a converted Tesla fanboy now. We've talked about that a few times.
I love the way he talks. I can't remember what he said last time, but it's like you're like in a werewolf movie where you know all the Teslas are driving around and then...
A vampire. He said a vampire.
Yeah, vampire.
When everyone is just walking around and then some shit comes down. And everyone is just running away, and instead the vampire can jump on the building and something else. Again, just
the Teslas are so fast that they're like superhuman, but they're just all these cars that are normally on the street. Like, you don't notice them, you know, being superhuman until.
Oh yeah. That was part of it. The fact that you don't notice them either. Yeah, that's it. He has some great quotes about Tesla on that front. They're not talking about that, and Joe was interested in learning about, of course, the difference between using the LiDAR system versus a vision-based system. And then if you go with a vision-based system, then self-driving becomes a software problem, basically. And then now I'm talking about Lex. Lex went into the different approach to software and software updates within the automotive industry. And he went on to a great quote to just highlight Tesla's lead when it comes to software. I'm going to quote him here. I am 100% for the software approach. I think we need to let good software engineers lead the way. It's the way to go. I wish other companies were competing with Tesla on this. On the software slide, Tesla is far ahead of everyone else in the automotive sector, and that's one of the problems. Competition is good, and I'm worried that there's people way too far behind to actually give Tesla new ideas and outcompete Tesla on software. And I think that's right. I mean, I've just been testing a car all day with from a legacy automaker, and I cannot talk about it. but if you heard my comments before on the user interface and the software of legacy automakers, they just not at Tesla's level, unfortunately. And specifically here, he's talking about software development as a whole and how it's being pushed to use our Tesla's case through over-the-air software updates.
Was he the one who was talking about LiDAR versus the cameras and saying that LiDAR is the best solution today, but
the LiDAR is the best
today because you know it can see shapes and in you know bad weather or whatever it can still see forms, but cameras are better long term because you get a lot more information. I don't know. I can't remember if it was this video or
something. Yeah, he did say that. Yeah.
So that's another interesting piece of the video where he kind of compares LiDAR to cameras and you know the TLDR and you know clearly I'm not like an expert in this area.
He seems to agree with Elon basically, right?
Yeah, I mean cameras are in the long run going to be better, but in the short term it's easier. Like LiDAR is it's very like. You don't need a really smart system to use LiDAR and kind of figure out where things are. So, and obviously Google and others are using LiDAR. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, I mean, just from my standpoint, I'm like, well, why can't you use both? Like, why can't you have LiDAR and, but I'm sure there's reasons.
The reason is that like for a full self-driving system, you're going to need, to solve the computer vision problem. So Elon and Tesla, they're looking at, let's just focus on that because that's the most important thing. There's just a full self-driving system that can react to anything a human can react to. Because one of the other problem with LiDAR also is that because of the spectrum it's operating in, if there's some fog, if there's some rain, if there's some snow, it's just not as good or even useful really. So you really need to solve the computer vision problem. And once you have that, you can do anything because, well, anything as good and better than human, because that's what humans do. They use vision to understand the environment and operate a vehicle. So, that was interesting. And it's interesting in the context, too, of so we talk about the software updates and how Tesla is such a lead on software update and just catching up for the legacy automakers is going to be hard. And I agree on that. But why I agree on it is because even though Tesla has such a lead on it, they've been doing it forever, ever since the Model S, they have software on date, but they're still figuring out how to make it work fine too. And we had a good example this week reported on an issue with the Tesla performance vehicle, which have limited power output for months now. The reason is that if you remember, like if you've been following Tesla for a while, you remember there's been some controversies about that Tesla's performance vehicles when Tesla launched the ludicrous mode. And there was just so much power out of that car that Tesla didn't validate really the powertrain that good. And there was some powertrain wear and tear that came from using the max power output. So Tesla ended up limiting it, where you couldn't use the full power of the car, which pissed off a bunch of owners because they paid extra to have the ludicrous capacity and now they couldn't have access to full power output. So then Tesla found another way to limit the output, where the only way to get the max power out of your motors were to have something called battery... max battery power mode and launch mode. So when you activate both of those features, then that's only then you can access the max power of the car. So that wasn't a compromise that everyone liked, but at least there was a way to access the full power of your car. What happened is that earlier this year, Tesla started pushing a new software update that just made launch mode fail and max battery power mode not being accessible. So if you don't have access to those features, you don't have access to the full power of your car. And everyone started updating their car. Of course, when you get a Tesla software update, you're like, oh, yeah, what's new on this one? And just you want to download and upload it as fast as possible. But for PD5D and P90D owners that we have ludicrous mode, it actually removed the ludicrous capacity of full power output of their car. a bunch of them started to reach out to Electric about it over the last few weeks, saying that we don't know what to do about it now, because we went to the service center about it, and they said that it was a bug, but they need a new software update to fix the bug, and they cannot push that Tesla, need to push it from the software team. That has been months ago that they had the issue. They have been aware for it for months, and they still have nothing. So a bunch of owners, they reached out to me and were like, oh, I'm afraid that it might not be a bug. It might be Tesla trying to stop us from accessing the full power of our car again, because they did it in the past. So we reached out to Tesla, and Tesla said that it's not the case. They really want to have those features back. They just pushed an update that, and I quote, inadvertently caused those features to go away. So you can choose to believe in them or not. I do believe in them. I think it's just a bug. They screwed up. But I don't understand just why it's taking so long, because Tesla has pushed a bunch of software updates since, and they still don't have the max battery power output. Max battery power output, by the way, if you don't remember, is the one where when you activate it, Tesla gives you a warning, and the warning says, are you sure you want to push the limits? This would cause wear of the motor, gearbox, and battery. And then your options are no, I want my mommy, or yes, bring it on. So Tesla had some fun with it, at least. Which one would you click, Seth?
No, no, I want my mommy.
You want your mommy? You prefer to no. Keep your powertrain intact?
So I don't know what's more worrying, if this is just an inadvertent bug that they haven't been able to fix for 3 months or 2 months. How long has it been? A month?
It started in March. The first update came out in March.
So at least a month. And, you know, it sounds like a low priority bug, I guess, sadly.
But it's also sound like an easy one to fix, right? It's
right.
Just, I mean, not having access to features that Tesla already wrote down. So
right. So I don't know. Like I want to believe it's small and insignificant, but then why is it taking so long to fix? And if it does take so long to fix, what about, you know, when the bug comes in that like turns off your car? Like, is it going to take a month to fix, you know, a bunch of cars that are broken down? I don't like. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, hopefully it just fell through the cracks or something. And now that we picked it up, at least maybe they put someone on it and they'll fix it soon. All right, moving on to Tesla's deal with FCA Fiat Chrysler. We reported that on that last month, Tesla made a deal with Fiat Chrysler to pull their fleet together in Europe in order for Fiat Chrysler to avoid the fines that come with the new emission regulation that puts a requirements on automakers to lower the average CO2 emissions of their fleet to 95 grams per kilometer. And so what's the update this week that we reported on, which was quite surprising, is that when that deal was reported last month, they said it was worth a few $100 million, around $200 million, something like that, which is a big deal. It's a huge increase of regulation, like credit for Tesla. Tesla does sell a lot of credits, especially in California. But now with the European market getting on board in 2020, we knew that it would be a boost for Tesla. A few hundred million sounds fine. But now this week it was updated with Chrysler confirming that they plan to pay up to $2 billion in credit Tesla. Actually, 2 billion euros, so $2.3 billion USD. That's a big difference. That's like a 10x factor difference.
That's over a year or 2 years, I think.
So here's the thing. We also got some information on that. That's going to be over basically a year, mostly a year, because they plan for 80%. The new regulation starts in place next year. So next year, you need a lot of EVs to reduce your average CO2 emissions of your fleet. And Fiat Chrysler don't have any EVs, or almost no EVs. I mean, they have the Fiat 500e, but what the hell is
that? Hybrid?
You have some hybrids. But so they need Tesla's vehicle to lower the grids, to lower their the emissions and not get fined. And apparently the fines can be worth a lot of money because they're ready to give our competitor $2 billion to avoid them. And so they plan for 80% of the credit coming from Tesla in 2020. Then they say it's going to go down to 15%. So from 80 to 15% in 2021, due to the fact that they plan to release a bunch of their own EVs in 2021. And then they plan it to be zero in 2022. So within 3 years, they plan to be independent and meeting their requirements for the new regulations in Europe. But I thought that was a big deal. Like Tesla getting $2.3 billion in the next 2 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, that was like their cap raise.
Yeah, basically, right?
Huge, huge deal. Not much reported, but...
Yeah, okay, so a bunch of people reported that $200 million last month. This week, the 2.3, they went under the radar. I saw it myself 2 days later and reported on it, and not many people picked it up. Surprising, right?
Yeah, and it's also surprising that Fiat Chrysler would just not build some EVs. Like, they must really not want to build electric cars. Because it must writing a check to Tesla for over $2 billion. Like, that's got to be like, I mean, this is the company that's probably going to destroy them, and they're basically writing them huge checks.
And, yeah. Well, you know, Sergio, what's his name? Sergio Macchione, the guy that died. Like
the late Sergio. Yep.
Sergio Macchione, I think was his name. He was furiously against electric vehicles.
Oh yeah. He famously told people not to buy the Fiat 500.
Yeah, I'm losing money on this. Don't buy it. Don't buy it. So, I think that guy slowed them down a lot. And now they're just finding out, because he died last year, I think.
Yeah.
And they have to replace him to find a new CEO. I think now they are starting to launch more significant EV efforts. I mean, they did launch one last year. I remember they had a whole presentation saying how many EVs you're going to have on all the different brands. But yeah, it didn't look like by next year it's going to be there. Takes a while for them to develop cars too, so we have to keep right. that in mind. 2020 coming fast, people.
I mean, I feel like they could, like the Fiat 500e, like I know that they weren't making any money on that, but maybe they should figure out how to make money on that because that could be kind of a fun car.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I see some Fiat 500 around and I see an exhaust pipe in the back, and then what are you doing? Like the Fiat 500e is just that as good of a car, and it's not, well, especially at the price that they're selling it. You can get those for cheap, especially if you want to get a used one, like a 1 year old one. They're presently paying you to get one. It's a very good deal. All right, Tesla released a bunch of software updates this week regarding Sentry Mode, driving visualization, a bunch of other things too. Driving visualization has been updated. Like, so when I said driving visualization, that's the rendering that you get on the left side of your screen if you have a Model 3 or in your instrument cluster if you have a Model S or X. And they do a new thing where it zooms in and out depending on the driving situation. So if you are driving on the highway, it stays zoomed out. But in closer situation, you're closer to the car. It appears closer. It's still like a third-person view, bird's eye view of a car, but closer. So, and it, you can see it zooms in and out basically based on the situation. So that's pretty cool. Sentry mode is getting an automatic location-based feature of it where you can have it be automatically... it's being enabled automatically everywhere except some situation where you can like disable it automatically if your car knows where your home is, where your work is, and you feel like you don't need it to be active there. You can uncheck those system or have it there too. Like sometimes if you don't trust the parking situation at your work or you're afraid that your coworker might key your car or something, then keep it on. But in the Sentry mode options, you have a new location base where you can say where to activate automatically or not. Software update preference, that's something that Tesla has been promising for a while. You can go into software update preference and choose advanced, where you're going to get the latest update as soon as it comes out. So instead of as soon as it's come out in your region and your car configuration, of course, but there's no more waiting for that upgrade, that that update that just never comes. Now, apparently, Tesla's going to fix that.
But you need to get this update to get that. So
how do you get that update then?
I'm still waiting for Sentry Mode.
You're kidding, right?
No, I think I have it. I just haven't activated it yet. I just haven't put it in my USB stick yet.
Oh, you need to do that.
Yeah.
You get the one with a lot of storage because they go fast. It activates a lot. So maybe that's a good way to try to limit activations if you can decide where it does work. Well, you can do it. I use it with my phone because I leave it as default, not activated. And then where I park somewhere, I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not so sure that I can walk away from my car. From the application, you can choose the Sentry Mode and I just activate that thing and make sure no one misses with my Tesla.
You know, by the way, you know I came up with the whole Sentry Mode thing, right? When Elon was asking for ideas.
I think so, right? Yeah, I kind of remember that. Like, yeah,
I called it don't mess with Teslas.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah, that was really good.
I don't know why I don't get credit for that.
Need to call it the Sentry Set feature or something. Like,
call that in. I got to call in.
Last thing that was on that new update this week was the conditional speed limits. So for the places that do have that based on like time of day or weather conditions where a specific speed limit changes, your car knows it and adapts to it. Pretty cool.
Yep.
All right, moving on. Did we skip the restructuring of Autopilot? We did skip that.
Yeah.
All right. Earlier today, we reported that Tesla has done a quite significant restructuring of the Autopilot team, which I think is a big deal because as Elon made it clearly over the last few weeks, Autopilot, full self-driving Autopilot is the priority. Basically bidding the whole company on it, if you ask me. So the team delivering Autopilot is more important than ever. And apparently from sources, we are hearing that there were some changes over the last few weeks that started actually back just before that investor day when they were working on making that demo work, like the demo that they give to the investor and they later like posted a video of it, of the new self-driving features. When they were working on that, apparently wasn't up to Elon standards and a few people lost their head over it. And then they did deliver it and ended up delivering during the day. Like, apparently Elon was like, was happy all that they rolled out and the test drives were great. Well, you don't need Elon for that. Like the investors reported that the test drive were pretty good. But then a few days later where I think some of the teams like learned from the first time, like the new timelines and what Tesla was like, what was the plan for everything. And maybe not everyone agreed with the vision or didn't agree with the timeline maybe. And a few more heads rolled after that. So that was like over the last week. And apparently, even the head of Tesla software, Stuart Bowers, who did give a presentation that day. My understanding from multiple sources is that he's still in the company, but he went on a sort of leave or a prolonged vacation, if you will, and got his responsibilities or several of his responsibilities stripped from him. And several people under him were promoted. And now reports directly to Elon instead of reporting to him. So I don't want to say that he's out or anything like that, but it does look on his way out, unfortunately. And now Elon has even more responsibility when it comes to the Autopilot software team. We're going to report back or come back on that because apparently I don't have all the names yet, but a few like long time Tesla Autopilot team member, like people that have been there for years and years that have been developing the system that is in use in customers today, and they've been ramping that up towards full self-driving. They're gone apparently. So we're going to look back into that and see just how significant the restructuring is. But my honest thing is that it is pretty significant. All right. Kia Niro EV.
Oh.
A few weeks ago, you were in California with the whole family.
Yep.
And you did try the small SUV crossover.
Yeah, those things aren't really SUVs as much as they kind of want to be. But you also tried the Kia. I think you had a day with it.
Yeah. You had a week, right?
Yeah, I had a week and a little, maybe even 9 days. And the most interesting thing was that they just threw in a level one charger, and they were just kind of like this, you know, figure it out. Which I thought was great because we didn't have a level two charger at home. So I was like, all right, this is what a lot of people are going to, because I've had, you know, multiple car chargers at home for years. And we were staying at my wife's grandmother's house. And, you know, we had a hard time even getting the 110 working just because, you know, the outlet was like in the back of the garage and we had to like kind of wire it around. So kind of what new EV drivers are going to go through. You know, I typically recommend people get a 240 outlet. You know, if your breaker's in your garage and you get a reasonable electrician, it probably take an hour and maybe like $20 worth of parts. So, you know, $100-$200 usually is enough to get it. If your box is in your basement, then it's, you know, it can go up with 1,000 or whatever, but over the lifetime of the car, it's really nice. With the level two charger, just about any electric vehicle will be full every morning, no matter what you do the night before. So with 110, the Kia Niro gets about 5 or 6 miles per hour of charge, which is the same as the Tesla Model 3. Tesla Model X and S get less. They get 2 or 3, maybe 4 if you're lucky, miles per hour of charge. So think about it, 10 hours, you get 50 miles. You know, if it's there 14 hours, then you're talking about, 70 miles per night. So, and a typical driver doesn't drive that much per day. So you can kind of live off of that. And then in the rare circumstance where you go on a, you know, a longer drive or have a bigger day, you can theoretically stop at CCS combo DC fast chargers, or theoretically you stop at a place for a long time at a level two charger and get a couple hours worth. Anyway, the experience was overall really good. My biggest beef with it was that they had kind of softened up the acceleration, and I think you talked about that too, right?
Yeah, you kind of floor it. It's just
right. You can floor it, but the car doesn't act like you floored it.
Yeah. The traction control system just kicks in. Apparently, there's a way to disable it, but I tried it. Did feel a little bit more powerful off the start, but it's not completely disabled, I think, because you can. There's a traction control off, but it's not like completely off. But if you hold it for 5 seconds or so, then they say it's completely off, but I don't like it's maybe like not as intelligent or something, right. But it's still, you still dull it down a little bit, I think.
Yeah. I mean, so I was like, wow, this is really like, I wonder if it's even broke or something. And I realized it was in eco mode. So I was like, oh, duh, I'll put it in regular mode. It'll feel like a, you know, Chevy Bolt. Mm-hmm. And I put it in, you know, the sport mode or whatever. And it was like kind of the same thing. And I was like,
I don't. You still have access to the same power, I think, from eco mode, sport mode. It's more like the pedal feeling,
right?
And that is different a bit.
So I don't know why they've done that. It's
just, but if like, you just floor it, it's the same thing. Like
it's a horrible choice, I guess. Some people were saying it. You know, it's a saves miles. It's better on the tires and better on the system. Like that. Like, let me worry about my tires. Like, if I'm worried about my tires, I will deal with that.
But it's the thing. It's not just about the wear and tear of the tires. It's those tires on the Kia Niro are pretty thin. Like they're not big tires. Like they're like not bicycle tires, but like big motorcycle tires.
Although they're not as thin as the BMW i3's tires.
No, those are the worst for sure.
Those are like.
But if you just put all the torque at the same time on those little tires, you'll slip.
Yeah. So.
But it's fun sometimes to slip a little bit.
I mean, I slip all the time in the Bolt. So the car itself, you know, a fine CUV, very similar to the Bolt or the Nissan Leaf inside. Very roomy, you know, not super roomy, but roomy enough. You know, it's a Kia, so it's not like you're inside a Mercedes. But it's nice. Like, it's perfectly fine. I think anybody like would be perfectly happy to have these as like a rental car. And that's kind of what I wanted to see. Like, could I, like, if Hertz, you know, I'm flying to San Francisco and Hertz has an electric car, could I rent an electric car and kind of get around on it and not be too inconvenienced by charging? And I think with this car and Tesla and whatever, I would be pretty easy to do, especially if I'm an electric car owner at home and I know the things about it. It's a little bit roomier than the Bolt. I have the Bolt. A little bit more trunk space, although not quite as deep. The Bolt acceleration is much better, and it's actually taller. I didn't know until I pulled up next to a Bolt that it was taller, but the Chevy Bolt rides a little bit higher. Which, you know, the
it just doesn't look like that. Like the Niro still, even though I agree it's a CUV, not an SUV, when you think of an SUV, the Niro looks more like that than the Bolt EV.
Yeah, I think the Bolt has smaller tires than the clearance there that kind of take away its SUV credentials. I think Chevy and GM could have done a lot better work on the design of the Bolt. It just like the outward appearance of it. I mean, I would never take that thing off road. Like, I wouldn't even think about it. Whereas, like, the Niro, you know, I took it on some dirt roads and I was like, yeah, this isn't so bad. But those tires and, you know, only having front wheel drive and all the other issues, like, I would never take these into where I would consider an SUV to be able to go, like, you know, kind of in the mud or whatever. So, overall, I mean, it's weird because there's like all these cars in this class, the Kia Niro, the Chevy Bolt, the Nissan Leaf, you know, the E-Plus version, and
the Kona EV.
So, like, you don't have a lot of, like, you have four different cars, or, you know, three different cars with two different, powertrains, but they're really not too big a difference in terms of, like, form factor of car. So, it would be kind of nice if one of these companies kind of branched out with a 200 plus mile car and did something a little bit different, maybe make it really big or make it, you know, a truck or make it, you know, whatever. But overall, like the Niro is a fine automobile. I think people that buy it are going to like it. And, you know, I'll end it with, there's probably not going to be enough of these. The same with, Hyundai Kona, they just don't make enough. And
that's on purpose, though.
Yeah, that's on purpose, and because they don't, yeah, I don't know.
They are a compliance car at the end of the day. Even though they technically now sell them outside of a compliance state, it's still very much so a compliance car because they're focusing the sales in California and other EV states.
Right.
But still, you can make a great compliance car. That's the. That's the moral here.
It's not hard to make a good EV. I think the original Kia Soul, that was my big takeaway. They basically gutted the car, put in EV components, and said, here you go, boom. And it actually wasn't a bad car.
All right, let's move on to a car that is a true full program, mass market electric vehicle program. And something that we've been waiting for a while, because every time we talk about a Volkswagen EV, everyone is like, nothing to show for. It's all vaporware. It's only press PR talk and things of the sort. But it's coming. They opened their order book and they released the specs and the pricing. Well, not the full pricing, but a better idea of the pricing We're talking about the ID, Volkswagen ID, which is now the ID3. So that's apparently the official name of the car. I'm not sure how I feel about that. ID3.
It doesn't really roll off the tongue.
No. Anyway, it's a small electric hatchback golf-sized vehicle, extremely popular, especially in Europe. I'm talking about the segment itself, hatchback segment. And now you have a great all-electric option that's coming in three different battery pack. Something else that I like a lot, because not a lot of automakers are doing that outside from Tesla. Talking about releasing a vehicle with different range option for different pricing. The standard model will come with a small 45 kilowatt battery pack for a WLTP rated range of 330 kilometers of range. So that's about 205 miles of range. So over 200 miles of range for the base car. Base car is going to come out at less than 30,000 euros.
That's pretty good for a base car, 45 kilowatt hours.
That's including VAT. So,
The price.
We're talking about German price, by the way. Like Volkswagen, they opened the book in Germany, but also in a few other European markets. I think all European markets, but we were working off the German prices here, and 90% VAT before incentive. So in the US before taxes, that would be like probably close to like what, between $25,000 and $30,000.
Yeah, and then you know that Volkswagen is not near their $7,500 thing. So you're talking.
Yeah. Less than 20, probably around 20,000 or even a little bit less than $20,000.
For a Volkswagen EV, that's pretty good.
And to
get back to that
range.
Yeah, to get back to the battery size, like if you think about the Hyundai Ioniq, that went from 28 to 38 kilowatt hours this year. Like then you know, the next year is going to have 38 kilowatt hours. That's still 7 kilowatt hours less than the base of the Volkswagen,
and it gets 165 around that of miles on the new one. This gets over 200. Well, that okay. Again, that's WLTP, so probably a little bit less than that.
But probably still, both. Like it's for a base model. That's pretty good. I'm impressed
because the two other models get a 58 kilowatt hour battery pack for 420 kilometers of range, which is 260 miles, and. The biggest battery pack is 77 kilowatt hour for 550 kilometers of range based on WLTP standard again, which is 342 kilometers of range. So a very much Tesla-like difference in battery capacities. The long-range version of Model 3 is believed to be around that 80 kilowatt hours, so 77 on this front. Here's the thing that's interesting too. So they released those things and they said that they're going to have a, did they call it the first edition version, I think? Yeah, first edition version of the ID3. So that's the first thing that they're going to produce. And they're going to normally, like Tesla, like many other automakers, they start with the higher end version of a car. That's the first production one because a car at the beginning of the production is much more expensive. And, if you want to make some gross margin on it, you're going to try to sell the higher margin version, which is normally the more expensive version. But this time they started with the mid-range one with the 58 kilowatt battery pack. So I'm not sure what that's about.
Maybe they're just focusing on, you know, the market share rather than money. I guess Volkswagen's not like weeks away from dying. So maybe they need just to get the market share up rather than just getting money.
Maybe. But then what's up with the production thing too? Because they've been guiding that car to come by the in 2019 for a while now. They reiterated that production will start by the end of 2019. But then they said that delivery won't start between mid-2020.
Yeah. But
how do you start production in 2019, start deliveries in mid-2020, like 6 months later, whatever? Not sure what's that about either. But they're going to start with the deliveries of the first edition. They're going to make about 30,000 of them. But the overall production, and that's really the thing that we should focus on. We want more electric vehicles on the road. And to do that, you need full electric vehicle programs of compelling EVs that are mass produced. And they're talking about 100,000 units per year.
Which yeah, is, and that's the first time we've heard that from anybody outside of Tesla.
Yeah, from a legacy automaker, that's definitely the first time. It's nowhere near Model 3. It's nowhere near Model 3, but 100,000 units is still significant. It's just not that significant for a company like Volkswagen if you compare it to the Golf, for example. All right. The price of the top version with the 77-kilowatt battery pack and over 300 miles of range is going to be less than 40,000 euros in Germany, which, again, 19%. That it's going to be a $40,000 car. $40,000 car with 300 miles of range before incentives. That's a big deal. Now, we've been talking about the equivalent of the euros in the U.S. just for, we know that we have a lot of U.S. listeners. Thing is, that car won't be available in the U.S. Doesn't look like it. Doesn't look like VW has any intention of bringing that car in the U.S., which is a big bummer. It looks like it's a 100,000 units per year compliance car because they're focusing the deliveries in Europe where it will affect their regulation. And of course, they're rushing to deliver it in 2020 because that's when the regulations are coming in and they need to reduce their fleet average emissions. So yeah, they're using for that. It's going to be on sale, of course, in China too. Same reason. In the US, they don't need it for the fines. So, and VW is tired of paying fines in the US. Dieselgate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Real bummer. I mean, I want to see that car in the US. I guess I'm gonna have to take a little trip to Norway again.
I want to get some performance specs on that too. I know. Is it gonna be a hot hatch? Is it gonna like blow the doors off of Chevy Bolt? Is it gonna be, you know, mediocre? What do we know?
Yeah, test drive should start pretty soon, at least for the press. But again, maybe they won't invite us because they don't try to sell it on the U.S. market,
right?
So who knows? I really want to give it a shot, though. I think it's going to be a great car.
I mean, all the test drives so far on that thing have been with the UK or the European press.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, you're talking about the ones like on the prototypes.
And, yeah, didn't they go to like South Africa or something?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
Yeah. I don't have my vaccines, I think, for South Africa, though.
Yeah.
Need to get that. All right, you want to talk about the Gogoro a little bit?
Yeah, so Gogoro, and Micah did a story on this. Micah Toll, if you don't know, is our kind of two-wheel mobility expert. Or
three wheels. He can do three wheels.
Three wheels and one wheel, too, I think.
Anyway, he did one wheel, too, yeah.
We have so a great less than four and four wheels. Anyway, yeah. Gogoro is a Taiwanese company. They are really tight partners with Panasonic. Every year at CES, there are Gogoros at the booth. They have this really cool kind of swap out station that it's similar to Kymco's. But Kymco has one, right? Yeah, I'm thinking of the right company.
But I think Kymco ripped them off from Gogoro.
Right. So Gogo was first, and basically you have these like pretty high performance scooters. You ride them around. You start getting low on battery. You pull up to one of these stations, but instead of charging your scooter, which would take, you know, 45 minutes or so, you just pull out what are effectively like two 12-volt batteries, you know, the car batteries. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty heavy. Like you wouldn't want to take these upstairs, or I mean, you could easily. But, you know, you just basically pull them out, put them in a station and pull out two charged ones and pop them under your seat, basically. And you go and, you know, the whole transaction takes like 30 seconds.
Just so we're clear for people listening, like we're not talking about those bird scooters here. We're talking about Gogoro is like a sit-on scooter. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's always a problem. But yeah, it's like a Vespa. So
yeah,
if you're familiar with a Vespa, this is what a Gogoro is, basically that kind of form factor. And it's just, you know, I've tried it a little bit at the CES booth. Like the batteries don't weigh that much. They're really kind of, you know, you can take them up to your apartment and plug them in. They have, you know, you can buy your own batteries or you can use the swap stations. It's a great program. They've come, I think, to Berlin They're in a couple other countries around. Anyway, now they have an even better, faster version of the scooter that gets 170-kilometer range, which is impressive. That's how many miles is that? Around 120 or something? Mm-hmm. 100, something like that?
Yeah.
Anyway, quite a bit of mileage, even with the batteries. And then the new batteries use the 2170 format cells, which are exactly like, I don't know how exactly, but they're the same ones that Tesla uses. In, you know,
the same format, but Tesla has a proprietary chemistry that they use with Panasonic.
Right. So very similar to Tesla's, made by Panasonic, but not the same chemistry. So this is going to be good for the Gogoro. I think it's going to get, you know, with the bigger range, the faster, even charging will be done faster. It's a great company. I hope they do well. I hope, actually more than anything, I hope they come to the US, because that would be really,
yeah,
kind of a lot of fun.
Not buying scooters, but they should.
I feel like in the southern states, they would go over well.
Yeah, where there's no winter.
Right.
For sure. All right. That's it for everyone for this week's episode of the Electric Podcast. We're going to be back next week. Hopefully, I'm going to be awake and not falling asleep like this episode. I'm going to be back in America, in California, actually. Yeah, I'll be in California next week when we do the podcast. So we'll see you guys same place, same time next week. Well, same place for you. All right. Ciao.